So, a quick review. So, we have the prohibition in the Aseret HaDibros of being a false witness. The Torah also has a very specific form of being a false witness known as an Eid Zomim, or Eidim Zomimin, which literally translates into a conspiring type of false witness. And as the Mishnah on Daf Hei, Maseches Makos, will learn, the way that they are created into this specific type of false witness is where after they give their testimony, two new witnesses come in and testify against the first witnesses and say, how could you possibly testify about whatever it was that you testified with? You were with us somewhere else at the time that you're claiming to have witnessed this event. That's based on the principle that any time a witness comes in to testify about anything, they must declare where they were when they saw the event, what time it was, what the place was, so that they're testifying to, we know exactly what they're testifying to, and that opens themselves up to having a second set of witnesses come in and say, hey, you, at that time, in that place, you were actually with us somewhere else. That will establish the first witnesses as Eidim Zomimin. The Torah has a unique punishment for Eidim Zomimin. Generally, the punishment for being a false witness would be makos, would be lashes. But for this type of false witness, who are established to be Eidim Zomimin in that specific manner, they get what the Torah says, va'asitem lo ka'asher zamam. You will do to him what they conspired to do le'achiv, to their brethren. So whatever they testified to, whatever they were trying to accomplish, that's what it is. That's what it is that we do to them. I will just mute everybody. Give me a minute. There we go. That's what we do to them. In that, so if they were testifying that Plony killed someone, and since what they were trying to do to Plony was get him killed by the court as a murderer, so now the Eidim Zomimin would be killed. If they testified that Plony ate a cheeseburger and therefore he's chayiv malchus lashes for eating the cheeseburger, then the witnesses get the lashes. If they were testified that Plony owes someone else $1,000 for having borrowed money or damaging his car, they would have to pay the $1,000. That's the general rule of Eidim Zomimin. We learned last week the Mishnah presents two cases that are exceptions to this rule, where we do not apply that rule of do to them what they tried to do to someone else. Exception number one was the situation in which witnesses testify that a Kohen is really disqualified as a Kohen. He's not a valid Kohen. Because this guy, the Kohen in front of us, they say his mother was divorced prior to marrying her husband, the Kohen. And since the Kohen wasn't allowed to have married her in the first place, all children that they have are halalim, are disqualified Kohanim. They're not allowed to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. They don't get first dibs on aliyahs or anything else. And so we come in to testify. We just want you to know, Beit Din, these guys, the family are disqualified because the father married his wife inappropriately. Or they say that the wife had done chalitza, the Cohen's current wife had done chalitza from a previous husband, meaning her husband had died without children, and she went through the process of chalitza. Both of those situations, she's not allowed to marry a Cohen. What happens if those two witnesses are found to be Eidim Zomimin? They had come in to testify, and then two other witnesses come in, and they say to the first witnesses, you weren't at the divorce proceedings, you weren't at the chalitza proceedings 10, 15 years ago, you were with us someplace else at that time. Okay, so we established the first witnesses as Eidim Zomimin. What punishment do they get? So let's assume for a minute that they're Kohanim even. So technically, the rule should have been do to them what they were trying to do to someone else. Make them disqualified Kohanim. Says the Mishnah, this is an exception to the rule. Even though generally that's how we punish the Eidim Zomimin, that's not how we punish them in this case in which they tried to disqualify a Kohen, but instead we would give them arba'im yakenu. You give him 40 lashes, which of course means only 39. That's exception number one. And then we learned last week, exception number two, the Mishnah teaches that if two witnesses testify that Plony killed somebody bishogeg, inadvertently, by accident, so the halacha is Plony therefore needs to run to an ir miklat, city of refuge, and live there until the death of the Kohen Gadol. If we find that those Eidim, the witnesses, are indeed Eidim Zomimin, so normally we would say, Ka'asher Zomam, give them what they were trying to do. Let's make the witnesses live in an ir miklat until the death of the Kohen Gadol. The Mishnah teaches us exception number two. We don't make them do that, and instead they get lashes, they get malchus, instead of having to run to an ir miklat. Those are the two exceptions of our Mishnah, as we learned last week. Let's start the Gemara again. We started it briefly yesterday. I let me screen share it for you for those who want. Here. Okay, here's the Mishnah and the Gemara. So the Gemara says as follows. Ask the Gemara, why are you telling me the opening line of the Mishnah? Let me put the screen in front of you again from the Mishnah. The opening line of the Mishnah was, how are witnesses made into Edim Zomimin? And then we gave these two cases that are exceptions. The Gemara says, that's a very strange thing. You said, how are witnesses made into Edim Zomimin? And then you gave me two exceptions to the case. This would be analogous. Just making this up here. If I were to start a sentence or start a chapter of a book, say, and say, here are the flavors of ice cream that I like. And then I list three flavors of sorbet. So you would say, wait a minute. Listen, if you're going to start a sentence, a chapter by saying, these are the flavors of ice cream that I like, don't give me a list of sorbet. Either say, here are the flavors of sorbet that I like. Sorbet is not ice cream. So don't tell me, here are the flavors of ice cream, and then give me a list of sorbet. Instead, so the Gemara asks, you should have said, Ein ha'edim na'asin zomim. Since what you list are exceptions to the rule, so don't start with, here are the rule of edim zomim, and say, how are witnesses not actually carried out to be edim zomim? Now, the other Gemara says, and furthermore, you'd ask a second question. If you do want to keep the opening line of the Mishnah as how are witnesses made into Edim Zomimin, but still that's a funny way to start this Mishnah here on Daf Beis, because a later Mishnah, all the way on Daf Hey, is going to go through this at great length and discuss the answer to that question of how are witnesses made into Edim Zomimin. Let's read the Gemara inside. Mi diktani l'kaman. We're going to learn later on. Aval amru, but if the second set of witnesses come and say, hey, chatem me'idim, how can you, the first set of witnesses, testify, shaharebo so ayom atem me'itim imanu b'makom ploni, on that same day, you were with us in a different place, hare elu zomimin. That's a direct quote from the Mishnah, meaning we have a Mishnah which discusses this. The Mishnah tells us how to become zomimin. So again, just going back to my analogy for a moment, if you open up the first page of the book and says, here are the flavors of ice cream that I like, and then I list sorbet, you'd ask, well, wait a minute, three chapters later, you actually answer this question and discuss all the ice cream. So why in the world would you start the first chapter with a header of here are the flavors of ice cream, and then you list sorbets? Those are exceptions. Either start with the header of here are the flavors of sorbet, say it straight, or if you want to keep your opening line, so then take what's three chapters later, which is actually answering the question, and say it right here and right now. So the Gemara answers this question by saying, Tana Hasamkai. Let me just drop this for those of you following along here. Tana Hasamkai. The Tana of our Mishnah is really standing, meaning he's still holding in another place. Where is he holding in? The end of the last Mesechta we learned prior to Makos. Meaning as follows, when we start Mesechus Makos, this isn't the first Mesechta that exists. Mesechus Sanhedrin came right before this. The very end of Mesechus Sanhedrin also discussed the case of Edim Zomim, and I believe we touched on this, this is the very last thing we did last week, and it discusses the following case. The background is as follows, again, I think this is a little bit of a review. There's a halacha called an Eshes Ish, meaning a married woman. A married woman is obviously not allowed to have relations with any other man other than her husband. If she does, they're called adulterers. The Torah has a prohibition, a severe prohibition of adultery, which is, of course, is also one of the Aseres HaDibros, and it comes with one of the Misas based in one of the death sentences in a human court, and that is of Chenek. Chenek, out of the four death sentences, is the most lenient of the four. Again, we're not talking about lenient in the sense of they're all going to die, but the most lenient form is Chenek, which means strangulation, and that is the punishment for a Eshes Ish. Both the man and the woman, the adulterer man and the adulterous woman, both receive the death sentence of Chenek. Torah has, as the last Mishnah in Masechta Sanhedrin teaches, one exception to that case of receiving the death sentence of Chenek, and that is if the adulterous woman is an Bat Kohen. She's the daughter of a Kohen. Since in such a circumstance she has not only defiled her husband, not only has she violated his trust, but she defiled the name of the entire Shevet of the Kahuna. So if the adulterous woman is the daughter of a Kohen, not only does she get the death sentence of Chenek, she's actually bumped up 2 degrees and she gets the punishment of Srefa, which literally means burning, which is the punishment of pouring molten lead down the throat of the perpetrator, and that is the form of death that she receives. So she receives the punishment of sreifa. The man in that adulterous relationship remains at the punishment of chenek. He is still punished to us by strangulation. So that's an exceptional case where you would testify against a couple and they would get different sentences. The woman would receive sreifa for the daughter of the Kohen, and the man receives chenek. That's under normal circumstances. What happens? The Mishnah teaches if the witnesses who come in and testify against this adulterous couple, turns out they're Eidim Zomimin. They weren't there at the time. They were in another city when the supposed adulterous relationship took place. And we know that because two other witnesses come in and they say to the first ones, you're testifying that you were in Montreal on a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock and you saw this act take place. You were with us in New York that night. You can't possibly testify that. Fine. So now the first set of witnesses are Eidim Zomimin. What punishment do they get? They should get what they were trying to do. In this circumstance, they were actually trying to do two things. They were trying to get the woman killed through sreifa, a more severe punishment. And they were trying to get the boel, the man, killed through a less severe punishment. Both of them are going to die, obviously, but the lav chenek. Which one do we give to the Eidim Zomimin here where they tried to do two things? The normal rule would have been, and this applies under any circumstance where a person did two things that violated two different prohibitions at the same time, you always get the more severe violation that you're responsible to receive. That was the normal rule. The Mishnah in Masechta Sanhedrin concludes that Masechta by saying, in this case of Eidim Zomimin against the daughter of a Kohen and a regular guy, the Eidim Zomimin received the punishment of the man of only Chenek, and not the higher punishment of sreifa. That's what the Mishnah there teaches. Let's read it inside the Gemara. Tana, our Tana of our Mishnah, Hasamkai. He's really still holding in Maseches Sanhedrin. Just again, as another simple example, imagine opening up book 5 of Harry Potter, just choosing a random example. So you read the first page in book 5, and you said, this is a funny place to start. This doesn't make any sense. Who's this character? And why is this conversation taking place? So a Harry Potter fan would say to you, what are you asking questions? You just opened up to the first page of book 5? You got to read book 4. If you read book 4, you'll understand why we're talking about in book 5. Says the Gemara the same thing. You're asking me a question on the Mishnah, the first Mishnah, Maseches Makos. Did you learn Sanhedrin? If you didn't learn Sanhedrin, of course you don't understand how we're starting off here in Maseches Makos. Let's finish Sanhedrin together. Now you'll understand Makos. What is taught there in the end of Maseches Sanhedrin? So we just read it in outside. We just spoke it out. Now we'll read it inside. Kol hazoimimin makdimin laosami. So all Eidim Zomimin can expect to receive the same punishment as whatever they were trying to give. Chutz, but there's an exception to this rule where Eidim Zomimin don't get the same punishment that they were trying to give, and that's the exception of Mizomime Bas Kohen Uboala. The situation of Zomimin against the daughter of a Kohen and her adulterer, She'ein Makdimin La'osa Misa, they don't receive the same death sentence that they were trying. Ella lemisa acheres, but they receive a different punishment, meaning they receive his punishment, which is the not normal situation that we would do where a person is really deserving of two. Normally we would have given him the more severe, but in this case, if you testified falsely against the daughter of a Kohen and a regular guy, you would get the lower punishment, the lesser punishment of the guy and not the girl. That was the last Mishnah in Maseches Sanhedrin. Our Mishnah then picks up and says, V'yesh Eidim Zomimin Acherim, that's what we just finished, is where you could do a half situation of Ka'asher Zomim, fulfilling due to them what they were trying to do. At the end of the day, in that case there in Sanhedrin, we fulfilled a little bit of what they were trying to do. They were trying to do two things, and what we give them is half of that. We give him the lesser of the punishment, but at least it's a little bit of what they tried to do. On that, our Mishnah now jumps in and says, you should just know there are some types of Eidim Zomimin, She'ein Osin Behen Din Hazama Kol Iker. There are some scenarios where we catch Eidim Zomimin lying because they weren't there at the time, and we don't do to them anything similar to what they were trying to do. What's an example of that? Or what do we give them when we can't give them anything similar to what they were trying to do? Ela Malkus Arba'im. Instead instead we give him lashes, we give him a set of 40 Malkos Ketzad. And now the Mishnah reads that into, the Gemara reads it into our Mishnah, Ketzad. Like, this is literally just a quote from our Mishnah. Me'idim anu be'ish ploni, if we testify against a certain person, shu ben grusha or ben chalutza, that he's the daughter of a divorced woman, or the son of a woman who had chalutza done, ein omrim yaseh zem grusha ben chalutza tachtov, we don't apply the rule to make the witnesses into disqualified kohanim, elaloka eshar ba'im, but instead they get the 40 lashes. Let me just outside summarize what we just did. Going back to the example that I created, let's say I started a chapter or a statement by saying, here are the flavors of ice cream that I like, and then I list flavors of sorbet. So you say to me, sorbet is not ice cream. If you're going to start with the statement of these are the flavors of ice cream that I like, tell me ice cream flavors. Or start with the sentence of these are. I say, no, I was in the middle of a conversation. I had started by saying, here are the flavors of ice cream that I like when I can't have ice cream and I have to have a frozen yogurt. And that's what I was previously talking about. I was already talking about that's what I said. Here are the flavors of ice cream. When I can't have ice cream, but I can only have frozen yogurt. And now what I just meant was to say, and here are the flavors of ice cream, like when I can't eat dairy at all. Sorbet flavor. I mean, I'm in the parsha of ice cream, but I was in the middle of talking about exceptional types of cases. I was previously talking about a type of exception where at least I can have dairy, I can have frozen yogurt, we could do a little bit of kasher zamam, we can give them at least part of what they were trying to do to someone else. Our Mishnah begins therefore with a discussion of what do we do when we can't do anything about what they were trying to fulfill. For example, where they testified about a Kohen who's disqualified, or they testified about a person who killed accidentally. We can't do anything to them like what they wanted to do. What do we do then? And that's where our Mishnah teaches. Well, what do we do in that case? We give them Malkus. Now, that ends the first part of the discussion. We'll move into the second part, which is a two-part discussion based on what we just said. Number one, we need to ask the question of, well, wait a minute, why can't I do to them what they tried to do? Why is it? How do we know that if false witnesses testify that a Kohen is disqualified, why can't I make them disqualify? Now, if they're not Kohanim, then obviously we can't. But let's say they are. Let's say the two false witnesses were Kohanim, and they're jealous of their Kohen friends who are getting more Truma, or getting more Aliyahs, or doing whatever, and they want to get back at them. So they make up a whole story, they come into court, and they say, these guys are not Kohanim, we were at their mother's divorce 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever the case may be. So why don't we do to them? The Torah says, do to the witnesses like you tried to do. Why don't we make them disqualify? That's the first step that we have to ask. And then after we get the answer for why we can't actually do that to them, then we'll have to ask the question of, so how do we know that when we can't do that to them, that we do give them lashes? Again, because the Mishnah gave us both of these exceptions. If you testify against a disqualified Kohen or that somebody killed accidentally, in both of those cases, we will give them lashes. So first we have to ask on both of those questions, how do we know that we don't do to them what they tried? Maybe we send the witnesses to an Eir Miklat. What's wrong with that? Let's disqualify the Kohanim. What's wrong with that? And then we'll ask, which we'll probably get to next week, maybe we'll get to till today. Then we have that, and who says we do give them Malkus? How do we know that that is what we actively do? So that is our next stage of the Gemara, which is now in front of you on the screen. Minani Mili, says the Gemara, how do we know? How do we know that in this first case in which we testify against disqualified Kohanim, that we can't do it to them, we can't make them disqualified? Reb Yeshua ben Levi, says Reb Yeshua ben Levi, to Amar Kra, I have a pasuk. So again, whenever you read a question in the Gemara and an attempted proof, you always have to, like, what type of proof are we giving? Is it in logic? Is it a pasuk-based what's the source? Or Rabbi Shulman Levi says, I have a drasha from a pasuk that says that if you try to disqualify a Kohen and you are lying, we will not do to you what you just tried to do to them. Because the pasuk says as follows, Va'asitem lo ka'asher zamam. That's a direct quote from the pasuk in Parshas Sefer Dvarim. This is talking about false witnesses. Va'asitem lo, you will do to him, ka'asher zamam, as he conspired to do. This is our source. Do to the witnesses what they conspired to do to their intended victim. The Gemara now has a drasha. The language of the pasuk was, va'asitem lo ka'asher zamam. Do to him. So the Gemara has a drasha, as it often does. Lo, it sounds like we're allowed to punish the witnesses themselves due to these false witnesses. Velo lizaro, but not to their children. Meaning the Torah says, listen, if you get false witnesses in front of you, they deserve to be punished. But you can't punish these witnesses in a way that's then going to directly impact their children. If we were to disqualify these false witnesses who came in, let's assume again that they were Kohanim. So if they came in and they testified falsely against some of their fellow Kohanim, and it turns out that they're Edim Zomim and they weren't there at the time, and we then said to them, aha, we caught you, now you're going to be disqualified. If we were to do that, what would happen to their children? If once the father is established as an invalid Kohen, by definition, his children, both probably those that he has and certainly those that he will have, are also going to be disqualified. Because if you come from a disqualified Kohen, you cannot be a valid Kohen if you come from an invalid Kohen. So the Gemara says, but you know how to do that. The Torah says you can only punish Lo, him, the witnesses themselves. And in this case, if we would apply the rule of due to him, what he tried to do, it wouldn't only impact him, it would impact the status of his children as well, and that we're not allowed to do. So Gemara says, I can't, says Rabbi Shulman Levi, so that's why we can't disqualify these particular witnesses. Asks the Gemara a very simple question. So velif saluhu lididei. So great, let's make a new rule. In the case of Edim Zomimin, if we catch the witnesses, let's disqualify the witnesses, velo lifsalu lizare, and we won't disqualify the children. There'll be a well-known exception that there is actually one case where you can have kosher Kohanim descended from invalid Kohanim. If those invalid Kohanim are because they were false witnesses, we'll establish a rule. Even though you're disqualified, we can't touch your children, and your children will remain valid Kohanim. Why don't we do that? So no problem. You come into court, we catch you as a false witness, we'll slap you with the fine that you now become disqualified, but children that you have will remain absolutely okay. Why can't we do that, says the Gemara, and then we'll be able to fulfill giving to him exactly what he tried to do to someone else. Answers the Gemara, we have a problem with that. Because ba'inon ka'asher zamam la'asot, we have to fulfill ka'asher zamam, do to him what he tried to do, v'leka. And if we did this, we'd be lacking in actually giving to these witnesses what they tried to do. Because what did these false witnesses try to do to their buddy the Kohen? They tried to disqualify him by saying that his mother was a divorcee. Well, guess what? Had they succeeded in disqualifying this guy by claiming that his mother was a divorcee, if they succeeded, what would happen to this guy's children? Obviously, all of his children would be disqualified too. Which means that if we make up a new rule of the witnesses, the false witnesses, when we punish them, we only punish them and not their children. If we were to do that, then we wouldn't actually fulfill ka'asher zama. We would not fulfill the do to them like they tried to do to someone else, because they would only get it, but not their children. But they were trying to disqualify this guy's person and his children. So the Gemara therefore says, again, according to Rabbi Shulman Levi, we're stuck. We're stuck when we catch Edim Zomimin, who are disqualifying a Kohen and lying, we catch him, because the Torah highlights that I'm only allowed to punish him and not his children. But if I do that and only punish him and not his children, then I didn't actually do to him what he was trying to do to someone else. So I get stuck. To make him disqualified and carry it through to his kids, I'm not allowed. To only do him and not his kids is not a fulfillment of do to him like he tried to do, since he tried to disqualify that guy and the guy's kids. Therefore, says Rabbi Shulman Levi, that's what the Mishnah said. You're stuck. You can't do anything to him in regards to his status. And since you can't do anything in regards to his status, because you can't just touch him and not his kids, it wouldn't be what he was trying to do. Therefore, we have nothing left to do other than give him Malchus. The only thing that we could do is give him lashes. That is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's response to this question of how do we know where that's from. Says the Gemara, Bar Pada Omer Kal V'Chomer. So the Bar Pada has a second answer to this question. Again, what's the question we're addressing? How do we know that if we catch false witnesses lying about the status of a Kohen, how do we know that we can't just do that to the witnesses, make them disqualified Kohanim? So Bar Pada says, I have a Kal V'chomer. I could, in logic, I can figure it out. What's his kal v'chomer that if I could figure something out in a more serious case, and for sure it applies in a more lenient case? And he makes the following arguments, a little complicated, but we can work it through. He says as follows, umam chalel eino mischalel, which literally would mean the one who desecrates or disqualifies is himself not disqualified. Let's just take a word of background to explain what we're talking about here. Let's go back to our Kohen, who, let's say, did marry a divorcee. Let's say we would have such a case of a Kohen who marries a divorcee. So we know that he's not allowed to do so. And we know that because he's not allowed to do so, any children born from that marriage are called halal. They're called disqualified. They're not a valid Kohen. They don't have the rights of a Kohen. What's the status of the actual man himself who married this divorcee? Meaning, he wasn't allowed to do so. So he's now in a forbidden marriage. It's a marriage that takes hold, it works, meaning they're married in halacha. They need a get to end the marriage. She's considered a married woman. If she were to have a relationship with somebody else, she's an adulteress. So the marriage works, but it's forbidden. Which, parenthetically, there are certain types of marriages in halacha which don't take hold at all when the Torah says, thou shalt not marry so-and-so, sometimes it means it doesn't work. Like, for example, if a brother would give a ring to his sister or to his mother and say, or to his daughter and say, hare ad mikudesh esli, and he would give her the ring and she would accept it. It's not that the Torah says it's forbidden and now you're married. That's such a high level of forbidden relationship, mother, sister, daughter, the marriage doesn't take hold. It doesn't work. It's that you can't marry such a woman. You can do whatever you want. You're not married. You don't need a get to absolve that marriage. She's not considered a married woman. It simply doesn't work. There are other types of forbidden marriages where the Torah says you can't marry such a woman. But if you do, it worked. You're married. You're not allowed to be married, but you're married. It's a valid marriage. And this is one of those examples that if a Kohen marries a divorcee, it's not allowed to, but they're married. Any children that they have are not Kohanim. What's his status? What's the status of the Kohen? Can he get the Kohen Aliyah in Shul? Is he allowed to work in the Beis HaMikdash? Can he eat Truma? Is he a Kohen or not? What's his status? So the halacha is, as long as he's engaged in the forbidden marriage, as long as he remains married, so he's living in sin, and as a Kohen, living in sin, not just any sin, but a sin against the status of his kahuna, so no, he does not have the status of a Kohen. But that's a temporary imposition on his status, as long as he remains in that marriage. If that woman were to die, or he were to divorce her, as soon as he's no longer engaged in the marriage, he returns to his status as a Kohen. He can get an aliyah in shul. He could eat his truma. He could do it. He's a Kohen again. It's only while he's married that he doesn't have that status, because that's a forbidden relationship, which is a very fascinating concept. We find this in a couple different places, in which because of the act of the parent, the child suffers more than the parent himself who did it. The parent, this father, marries a divorcee. The children born from that marriage are born as non-Kohanim, and there's nothing they can ever do to fix that. There's nothing they could do to upgrade their status. They're born from a forbidden relationship. They will always be what we call chalolim. Always. The father himself who did this does not have that status. As soon as he divorces his wife, he returns. And therefore, he will be a Kohen, but his children will not be. So the Gemara now, Bar Padon, the Gemara says, I can derive something from that. If it's true that HaMechalel, this man himself who marries a divorcee, Eino Mischalel, he himself does not become disqualified, so that he disqualifies others, meaning his children, but even though he disqualifies others, his children, he himself does not become disqualified. How should we treat witnesses who try to disqualify someone? So if we put it on our scales, as we talk this through, who's worse? The Cohen himself who marries a divorcee, or witnesses who claim he married a divorcee? On our scale, which guy is worse? The witnesses who falsely claimed he married a divorcee, or the guy who actually did? So obviously in the heavenly scales, the one who actually did marry the Kohen, the divorcee, is worse than witnesses who only tried to disqualify but never actually succeeded. So the Gemara says as follows. Umam Chalal, if the guy himself who disqualifies his children by marrying, the Kohen himself who disqualifies others, himself is Eino Mitchalel. He himself does not become disqualified. So Habal Chalel. So somebody like witnesses who tried to disqualify the Kohen, Velo Chilel, and did not even succeed because we caught them in their lie. Eino Din Shelo Yischalel. Shouldn't it be true that they themselves don't become disqualified? Meaning, one more time, just to talk this through, what's the question on the table again? The Mishnah taught that if we catch these false witnesses, we do not make them into disqualified Kohanim. The Gemara wants to know, why not? The Torah says, due to them, what they tried to do. So our first answer from Rabbi Shimon Levi says, I have a pasuk. A pasuk says, I can't make them disqualified because it's going to impact their children and you're not allowed to do that. Bar Pada says, I don't need a pasuk. I have a logical argument that there's no way we can disqualify these witnesses as disqualified Kohanim. Again, even assuming that they are Kohanim, there's no way we could do that. What's his logical argument? They're not any worse than the Kohen himself, if the Kohen himself were to marry a divorcee, the children are disqualified, but not the Kohen himself. So if the guy himself, who is so bad that he actually married the divorcee, does not himself become disqualified, witnesses who are more kal, who are less severe, that they only testified fault, they didn't actually do it, they didn't marry a divorcee, so certainly they who tried to disqualify and didn't even succeed, they shouldn't get a worse punishment than the Kohen himself. The Kohen doesn't become disqualified who marries a divorcee. We're going to make the witnesses worse than the Kohen? That doesn't make any sense. So logically, I could prove there's no way the witnesses therefore should be made into a disqualified Kohen. That is the Kal Vachomer that Bar Pada tries to learn. However, the Gemara rejects. As much time as we just spent trying to understand his Kal Vachomer, the Gemara is about to reject it. We'll give it a shot now to understand hopefully we've got that straight. Now the Gemara says, Maskifla Ravina. Ravina asks a question on Bar Pada's Kal Vachomer and says, that logic doesn't hold. And his question is as follows, because in Cain, if we were to use your logic, then Bitalta Tyrus Edim Zomim, and you would have completely destroyed this entire concept of giving Edim Zomim in what they tried to do. Now, Ravina is going to say, again, that's just his line. If that's true, you would have upended the entire principle. To understand what he's going to say, which he's going to explain in one more line, let's just do one more line of background, and then we'll understand what the argument that he's trying to make. There's a halacha, which we're going to see later, a few dapim from now, that Edim Zomimin, the rule that says that we give to them that which they tried to do, has one major caveat to it. It's a perplexing caveat, and it requires a lot of discussion, but as a statement, it's simple. Meaning understanding it is hard, and all the Rishonim tried to explain it. When we get there, we'll talk about it a little bit more. That is as follows. Think about the court process. When witnesses are brought into court in a regular case, they testify against Plony. Whatever it is that Plony did, he ate a cheeseburger, he murdered somebody, whatever happens. So now they give their testimony. Beis Din now takes in their testimony. They need to deliberate on the case. However long it takes, they do the pros, the cons. We think he's chayev, is he zakai, is he guilty, is he innocent, whatever they decide. And then they have a decision that's rendered, and that's called the Psak Din. As they did in the TV shows, they give a clop on the table with their the gravel, and they make a decision. They render a decision. So and so is chayef. Now, so there we had the stage of accepting testimony. We have the deliberations, and then we have the psak. Beis Din has now decided, based on this testimony, Plony is Chayev Malkus. He has to get lashes, he needs to be killed, whatever the case may be. Then there's a very short period of time between the Psak Din and when we carry out the punishment. Unlike in the secular courts where a person can sit in death row for years, decades, just waiting to be killed. There's no such thing like that in halacha. From the moment of the Psak Din, by the end of that day, the justice will be carried out. We never let a victim sleep on it. He doesn't go to sleep knowing he's going to be killed the next day or get the lashes. If the Psak Din is he's deserving of it, it's given to him. It's given to him right away. The mission is going to teach later on. Edim Zomimin are only given their punishment of due to them, what they tried to do, if we catch them in between the Psak Din and the carrying out of the Din that day. If two subsequent witnesses come in and say to the first witnesses, hey, you were with us, you can't be testifiers about this, but they say that before the Psak Din was ever given, we're still at the deliberation stage, then we simply throw the first witnesses out, but we do not punish them in this unique way of giving to them what they tried to do, because we hadn't yet rendered the decision. Similarly, if we already carried out the decision, for example, we already killed Plony based on their testimony. They testified that Plony killed somebody, so we killed Plony. Or they testified Plony ate the cheeseburger, so we gave Plony the Malkus. If later, a week later, 2 weeks later, second set of witnesses come in and they say, hey, we heard about this case that you accepted testimony from these witnesses that said so-and-so about such a thing, about having a... Can't be. They were with us somewhere else at that time. If that's what happens, we might exonerate the person who we said was guilty, but we will not go back and punish the Edim Zomimin and give them what they tried to do, because it's too late. We already did it. We only give Edim Zomimin what they tried to do, meaning they got a Psak Din and they were about to, but not if it was actually given already. And if you'll ask, wait a minute, that sounds strange. It would seem just the opposite. It's even worse. If we actually carried out the punishment to an innocent victim, all the more so we should punish the Edim Zomimin with what they tried to do. It's a fair question that needs to be addressed. And our Gemara, not really addressing the why of it, but is going to utilize that to prove that the logic of Bar Pada that we had just said a moment ago can't possibly work because of that particular question. Let me read it a line inside. I hope it'll be clear. The problem with Zoom is that if we were sitting around a table, I'd be looking at your faces, and either you'd all be saying, like, nodding, like, you get it, or you'd have, like, these blank faces, like, I don't know what in the world he's talking about. But I can't see any of your faces, so I have no idea whether or not this is making any sense or not, so I'm just going to keep on going and hope that this is working. So the Gemara then says as follows. Why is this logical argument of Bar Pada? And one last time, what did Bar Pada said? He said, listen, if the Kohen himself who married the divorcee does not himself become disqualified, then these witnesses who are less severe, they didn't actually marry the divorcee, they for sure shouldn't themselves become disqualified. So Ravina says that logic doesn't hold up, because look at the following. Uma hasokel eino niskal. If a person who testifies that another person needs to be stoned and it succeeded, a person actually succeeded in getting an innocent person stoned because he testified that he violated Shabbos, and so we accepted his testimony, we stoned the person, and then we found him to be Edim Zomimin. That's so much worse. If a person who actually carried it out is not stoned, Habaliskol, so somebody who comes to try to get somebody stoned is clearly less, not as bad. He didn't get anything done. So then certainly, Eino Din, Shelo Yisakel, if we're going to use that type of logic of saying who's considered worse, then all of Edim Zomimin is built on this principle of the guy who actually got his false testimony carried out, he doesn't get punished. So then if we use that logic of somebody who only tried to, he's certainly not as severe. He certainly should not be punished. But we know that the Torah does punish the person who tried and didn't succeed, the person who got a psak din, but it wasn't carried out. So simply to say the logic of this guy actually did it, like the Kohen who married a divorcee, or witnesses who did get their false testimony carried through, if they don't get it, you can't make a logical argument then somebody who only tried to, they certainly shouldn't be punished. Therefore, the Gemara says, Mechvarsa kiddushaninan meikari. Go back to the first answer of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. If that whole logical argument made you dizzy, don't worry about it. I'm simply going to summarize that as follows. The conclusion of our Gemara is, how do we know that if false witnesses are caught trying to disqualify a Kohen, how do we know that we do not make them disqualified, but instead give them lashes? So the Gemara's conclusion is like the answer of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. We have a pasuk that says, Ka'asher zamam va'asisem lo ka'asher zamam. Do to him that which he tried to do. You can only do to him. You cannot do it to his children. And if we were to disqualify the Kohen, it would impact his children, and we're not allowed to do it. And if we tried only to do it to him and not impact his children, then that would be missing the whole point of that's not what he tried to do to someone else, and therefore we have no option. Let's do a little bit more, because the next piece is totally just in line with what we just did. The second case of our Mishnah, now we're going to switch out of the first case, which was disqualifying a Kohen, to the second case, which was where witnesses falsely testify that somebody, that Ploni, killed somebody accidentally. What was he therefore trying to make happen to Ploni when he testified that he killed somebody accidentally? We were trying to make Ploni run to an ear miklat. And the Mishnah taught that if we catch these witnesses as liars, as Edim Zomimin, instead of sending them to an ear miklat, instead, we give them Malkus. The Gemara asks the same question. Minani mili. How do you know? Why not? What's wrong with sending these false witnesses to the Eir Miklat? Let's do to them what they tried to do to this poor innocent guy. They lied about the fact that he killed somebody Bishogeg. So let's send them to the Eir Miklat like they tried to do. So the Gemara says, Amar Reish Lakish to Amar Kra. Reish Lakish says, I have a pasuk. It says, "Hu yanus el achat he'arim." End quote. When the Torah discusses the inadvertent murderer, it says that if a guy kills somebody else by accident, he needs to flee. He needs to run to one of the cities that are designated as an ir miklat. So the Gemara makes a very similar drasha to what we had a moment ago. The pasuk says, "Hu yanus." He shall run to one of the cities, meaning only an actual murderer himself runs to one of the cities. Who? Him. That murderer runs. Velo Zoymimin. Says Reish Lakish, again making a very similar drasha. Only murderers themselves, inadvertent murderers themselves, run to an ir miklat, but not false witnesses who didn't actually kill anyone. Ir miklat is reserved only for the actual murderers, but we do not send to them these false witnesses who didn't actually kill anyone on their own. Similar to the first discussion, or the first case of the Kohanim, Rabbi Yochanan now comes in and says, I have another Kal Vachomer. I don't need a Pasuk to teach that we don't send the Edim Zomim into an Eir Miklat. I have a Kal Vachomer. And he's going to make a similar type of logical argument, and then we're going to reject this as well. So I don't want to take up too much time with this, but let's try to follow Rabbi Yochanan's logic and then the rejection of it afterwards. What's Rabbi Yochanan's argument? He suggests as follows. He says, look, let's do two words of background. What's the status of a purposeful murderer, meaning not an inadvertent murderer? Some person is has intent, and he kills somebody on purpose. What's his punishment? So we give him a death sentence. What if he tries to run to an ir miklat? Will we allow a rotzeach b'mezid, somebody who killed somebody else on purpose, do we allow him to go to an ir miklat? Certainly not. We send him right out of there. You're not allowed to be here. So Rabbi Yochanan says, well, listen to my kal v'chomer. Umahu sha'asa ma'asa b'mezid. If a guy does an action b'mezid, he actually kills somebody else and he kills him on purpose. Eino gola, he does not go into exile. We do not allow such a person into an ir miklat. He's got a death sentence on him, but he can't go to an ir miklat. So Rabbi Yochanan says, that guy Who's worse, again, in our heavenly scales? The murderer who killed somebody on purpose, or false witnesses who testified falsely that somebody killed somebody else? There's no question. The actual murderer is much worse. If the actual murderer himself, who did an action on purpose, does not go into an galus, does not go into exile, does not go into an ir miklat, hey, these witnesses, they didn't do an actual act on purpose. They only testified. They used their mouths. They made up a lie. They didn't actually kill anyone. So if the murderer himself, who does something on purpose, doesn't go to an ir miklat, these witnesses, who they were also on purpose, but they only used their words, you're going to give them more of a punishment than the murderer himself? The murderer doesn't go to an ir miklat. How can you send these witnesses who did less than the murderer? If the murderer doesn't go to an ir miklat, certainly witnesses who lied about this and didn't actually do anything with their hands for sure should not go to an ir miklat. The Gemara rejects this and says, wait a minute, you're missing one major point. Going to an ir miklat is not only a punishment, it also serves, or just not, it's not just a protection for him, but it's both a protection and it's also a punishment for him, and it achieves a kapara, it achieves atonement. When the accidental murderer has to live in an ir miklat, it gives him a sense of atonement. So the Gemara says, your logical argument is flawed in one major way. Your very argument actually concludes the exact opposite conclusion, meaning, this murderer who didn't act on purpose, you're right, we don't send him to an ir miklat, but that's because low likely we don't send him to an ir miklat, ki hechi delo tahavile kapara, so that he shouldn't achieve an atonement. You don't deserve atonement of an ir miklat. You need a much more severe punishment to achieve atonement, so that the reason why we don't send the purposeful murderer to an ir miklat is because you can't get atonement. You don't deserve atonement. But maybe, hey, these witnesses who are not as bad as an actual murderer, they didn't do an actual act, b'mezid. Maybe, nami liglu, they actually should get the punishment of galus, of going to an ir miklat. Kihechi de la havilu kapar. They do deserve kapar. They're not as bad. So in other words, Rabbi Yochanan's whole argument was, I can prove that we don't send these false witnesses to an ir miklat, because listen, if we don't even send the murderer to an ir miklat, why should we send these witnesses who are not as bad? Whereas it's not just the opposite. The murderer doesn't go to an ir miklat because we don't want him to achieve any form of atonement in such a manner. He needs something more severe. But maybe these witnesses who are not as bad, maybe they should go to an ir miklat. So if that was your only logical argument, proving that a murderer on purpose doesn't go to an ir miklat doesn't help you prove that these witnesses wouldn't go. So the Gemara again here also says, Ela mechfarsa kid Reish Lakish, we return again to the explanation of Reish Lakish, which was from a pasuk. How do we know that false witnesses against people that they inadvertently killed somebody don't go? Because the pasuk says, who runs to an ir miklat? That's the English word, who runs? The Hebrew word, who, yanus, he. The only a murderer actually runs to an ir miklat, but somebody who's not a murderer does not go. And therefore witnesses who did not actually inadvertently kill anyone would not be sent to an ir miklat. Therefore, after all of these, this is a difficult series of arguments. Let me just summarize as follows. We had two exceptions in our Mishnah to the rule of Edim Zomimin. If you testify falsely about a Kohen that he's disqualified, we do not disqualify the witnesses, but instead we give them Malkus. And we do not send false witnesses who testify that somebody killed somebody inadvertently. We do not send them to an ir miklat. Instead, we give them both, those two exceptional cases, Malkus. The Gemara asks on both cases, why not? Why don't we give them what they tried to do? And in both cases, the Gemara concludes it's learned out from a pasuk. In the case of a Kohen, the pasuk says, Va'asisem lo ka'asher zaman. We only do to the witnesses like they conspired to do, and we can't punish the witnesses in a way that will impact the status of their children. Therefore, we cannot disqualify the witnesses themselves as Kohanim. Certainly, if they're not Kohanim, obviously it's not relevant to them. But even if they're Kohanim, we cannot make them disqualified Kohanim because it would affect their children, and we're not allowed to do that. Therefore, we give them Malkus instead. Similarly, the pasuk describes by somebody who kills somebody inadvertently, who yanus el achat teharim. He runs to one of the cities. The Gemara says that's an exclusion. only somebody who actually murdered somebody by accident runs to an Eir Miklat. We do not allow, that's to exclude false witnesses, they do not run to an Eir Miklat. Since we can't give to them what they tried to do, because we have a pasuk that says we don't do that, instead we give them Malkus. Mirza Hashem, next week's Gemara is going to then ask and say, okay, all the Pesukim taught us is that we can't do to them what they tried to do. We can't disqualify them. We can't send them. Who told you that then what we do is Malkus? Maybe we shouldn't make them run around the block 100 times. Who told you that when you can't do to them what they tried to do, that the net result is Malkus? All you've taught me so far is that we can't do that to them what they tried to do to someone else. Next week, the Gemara will ask, so how do we know that what we do then give to them is Malkus? Look forward to seeing you. Maybe things will change significantly. We'll be in person by then. I doubt it. So I look forward to seeing you again over Zoom next week. Next week, actually,